What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to another live edition of the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, draft expert Dalton Pence. Guys, how are we doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Dalton, thank you for blessing us with your Christmas day, the NBA draft day. I know it's a little late. Well, maybe not for you. You're in Houston, so it's a little bit better for you. But a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, not a problem at all. It's definitely been quite an eventful day, but that's what we've been looking forward to. So can't really be too picky about what goes on.
It's been a lot. You know, it started early today. There was trades like right from the afternoon carrying on. We still have trades going on. The second round is still technically going on while we're recording this, but plenty of stuff to talk about first round wise. Expectations for the draft. Is this more than what you guys expected in terms of excitement?
For me, probably less than I expected. I was under the indication we were going to be seeing like trades left and right and like some big trades. I know that me and Nick had talked maybe about like Minnesota moving Teague or Andrew Wiggins, especially after they got the sixth pick. But we didn't see any of those like larger moves. They were the relatively quiet draft day trades from my viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of pretty much what I saw as well. I was looking for a blockbuster trade because that's kind of what the notion was, that there was going to be something of that caliber. But in terms of overall general trades and stuff like that, it's probably a little more active than years past because I haven't seen that many teams move up and down in the top 10 in quite some time. But I was still kind of looking for a big move because I feel like that the scenarios in the NBA kind of set the stage for it, so...
Yeah, there wasn't necessarily a ton of player movement, but there was a lot of pick movement. Then also there was a good amount of reaches. Obviously, I'm not no draft guru. Dalton can talk on that a little bit later. But it felt like a lot of guys that were expected to go either late first round or some guys that were supposed to go early second round ended up getting drafted late lottery or just picks that you did not foresee happening. But let's get started with the trades. You know, we started early. We kind of talked about that. Earlier today, Phoenix traded with the Pacers. They traded TJ Warren, number 32 pick for the to the Pacers for cash. Reaction to this one.
Go first.
TJ Warren, the 32 pick for cash.
Yes. The Pacers just got done trading the 32nd pick for 3 second round draft picks to Miami. It caught my attention. So TJ Warren, another Pacer trade. So this was a guy I've mentioned before with you, Nick, when we've talked about possible targets. I know TJ Warren was the guy I mentioned because he was on a friendly deal. $10 million this year, then I think, was it like $11.5 or $12 million, and then $13 million the last year. Just a friendly deal, 25 years old. Obviously, he's played on these bad Phoenix Sun teams, so some of these stats may be a little bit inflated. But last year shot a career best 43 from three, 49% from the field, I believe, as well. 1.2 steals per game, a decent rebounder, can play the small ball four. And all the Pacers gave out was cash and got this 32nd draft pick, which they just traded for 3 more second round picks. So this is a pretty good trade overall on the day. The Pacers wanted to get aggressive. They probably know they can't get a big time star in free agency. So they went after him. They got a young guy who can kind of fill the void of trying to go small and faster and can shoot.
Yeah, pretty much so. TJ Warren's a guy that's kind of been bounced around the past couple years in terms of the talk regarding the trade deadline in the season. And it's really kind of questionable what he is able to yield in terms of a product coming back to the Suns. But to be able to get him in the offseason for the 32nd pick just in an act of salary dumping, I think is good for the Pacers. Like you mentioned, Corey, he's on a pretty friendly deal, and when he's healthy, he's a good player, can contribute, definitely another scoring option alongside Oladipo. So I like this move for the Pacers more so than the Suns.
Yeah, it's interesting for the Suns side because they made a trade later in the night where they took on cap space, and it seemed like the whole purpose of this deal was to get rid of cap, you know, salary in the centers of the Pacers and giving them a pick in this, in which Corey mentioned turned into second round pick. So TJ Warren's an interesting guy. I think he definitely has some skills and can help. And the contract's kind of a bench player slash, you know, fifth starter contract. So not bad. It'll be interesting. I'm the most intrigued can he keep up that 43% from three? You know, his whole career, he shot around 30% or under 30%, not a great three-point shooter last year, a lot better. So can he continue to do that? I think that'd be the biggest question in terms of what he can bring for the Pacers. But then after we got news on that, we got another trade. And it was reported after, you know, the Lakers and New Orleans made that trade and they got the four pick from the Lakers. The Pelicans were looking to move that pick. The Pelicans send the four pick, the 57 pick, a future second round pick, Solomon Hill to the Hawks for the number 8 pick, the number 17 pick, the number 35 pick, and a heavily protected first round pick 2020 via the Cavs. So what are your thoughts on this trade? And we could talk about the players picked. You know, obviously Atlanta took DeAndre Hunter, someone they were high on. New Orleans ended up with Hayes, Alexander Walker. What are your thoughts on this trade?
All right, so first, I love it. I'm going to talk from Atlanta's perspective first. For Atlanta, it makes sense because you have this young core you're rebuilding. We know it was a top three player draft, and then 4 through 8 or 4 through 9, you could kind of have taken anybody in that position. They really wanted DeAndre Hunter to pair alongside of Trae Young. You already have Herter. You already have John Collins. So it's just another nice young piece. And then David Griffin. This guy's been on an absolute tear the last 2 weeks, basically. I'm trying to find all the moves he made in 2 weeks. But basically, he's made this probably the best rebuilding team right now, or one of the best rebuilding situations right now in the span of 2 weeks after flipping AD for all those youths, flipping these picks again today. Getting rid of Solomon Hill's contract off the books is probably the biggest part about this. So again, shout out to David Griffin, who keeps just destroying everybody.
And just to jump in there, you know, David Griffin's very active. And obviously, you know, they have a super jump start for the rebuild because they're trading one of the best players in the NBA. And he got really, really good value for him. And you don't necessarily see that. And then to turn this pick and not, you know, not be happy and teams knowing you wanted to get number four and to still get a lot of value. And like you mentioned, just the cherry on top was getting Solomon Hill in there. Now you have even more cap space. So from New Orleans side, really good. And then I think for the Hawks side, you know, they took a swing again and they wanted to get a player they really liked. Similar to last year, they were happy getting Trae Young and not Luka. They won Hunter, they got him, and they feel good about where they're at. And obviously they had another pick in the draft too.
Yeah, and talking about it from a draft perspective, because you also talked about it from a kind of an overall picture perspective, I love this fit for New Orleans. Obviously getting Zion is the cream of the crop, but to be able to get a guy like Jackson Hayes at number 8 is absolutely huge, because I think that he's definitely going to be a complement to Zion due to his athleticism and the role that he's going to play. But also getting a shooter like Nikhil Alexander-Walker is huge. For Atlanta, I understand getting their guy in DeAndre Hunter. I'm not so high on him as others are, but I understand you get a healthy mix of a 3-and-D wing to put alongside of an offensive-minded players like Trae Young and Kevin Herter. So I understand it from that perspective. I like it for both sides, but I mean, you have to tip your hat to David Griffin at this point, because I mean, he's really doing great things in New Orleans thus far.
100%. And you know, we could touch on all these trades a little bit longer, but there's literally so many of them. We got to keep it going. Another trade that happened, Minnesota and Phoenix. Minnesota sent 11 pick and Dario Saric to Phoenix for the number 6 pick. 6 pick turned into Jarrett Culver. 11 pick turned into Cam Johnson, which was a big surprise. So thoughts on this move?
I mean, I love Culver going to Minnesota. Obviously, we saw – I also thought it was kind of funny how him and Hunter went so close in the draft well after them matching up in the title game. It's always funny how those kind of those things tend to happen. But Culver should be a good pick for Minnesota, a guy who can score, a guy who can create his own shot. They're looking to rebuild. They're looking to try and get rid of Teague and Wiggins. This is a young guy who can probably stay through that, of course, depending on if they can get a guy like D'Lo, who they've been rumored to get. The Suns, it didn't make any sense because, like we mentioned earlier, the T.J. Warren deal was getting rid of Cap, and then they get Dario Saric, who I'm actually still a big fan of. I like Saric's game. I just think he's kind of been he's just off. He just hasn't been playing well, but I still think there's potential in him. And then Cam Johnson, Dalton, you can speak more on that.
Yeah, this was a questionable. If I look back through the first round, which just concluded probably about 10-15 minutes ago, this was the pick that you look back and you're like, hold on, what? I mean, the Suns could have necessarily probably traded down to about pick number 20 and still gotten Johnson and cheaper, considering it wouldn't be a lottery pick. But it was definitely a reach. I think that Cam Johnson's going to be a solid NBA three-point shooter, kind of like maybe a Danny Green type role, maybe not necessarily to the effect of Danny Green and what he's doing for Toronto and for teams in the past. But to get him at 11, it just kind of makes me question the whole draft scouting, because you look back in the past, I mean, Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, I mean, there's been so many kind of questionable reaches, and this just honestly seems like it could be another one.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, like you mentioned, Dalton, a lot of people had Johnson later in the draft, obviously a good shooter, and that can help Phoenix. But at this point, I saw someone make a joke that Johnson is older than how many wins the Suns had last season. So it's definitely interesting what they're deciding. Like we hinted at earlier, TJ Warren, they traded him for cash to get drop off his salary. And then they take Aaron Baines, which we'll talk about that trade later. Just a lot of questionable stuff from the Suns, something we've seen from them the last couple seasons. But overall, I think from the Minnesota side, not bad, like you guys mentioned. I think Culver is a nice prospect. Obviously, Dario Saric, I think, just didn't really fit that well with them. He didn't really have much success in Minnesota. They couldn't really find him the right role. So why not trade him, move up a couple spots, and get a player that you like. Now on to another trade, Boston and Philadelphia. Philadelphia trades number 24, which they ended up sending to Phoenix later on, and 33 for pick 20, which turned into how do you say his name, Dalton? Matisse Thybulle?
Matisse Thybulle, yes.
So what do you guys like about this trade?
Dalton, you can lead off from this point on because you're going to know more about these prospects than me.
Yeah, well, I've known from – it's been made known for probably about the past couple of weeks that Philadelphia has really been high on Thybulle. Thybulle's kind of a guy that if you need a good defender, he's your guy. He's probably one of the top two or three best on-ball defenders in the class, and that's something that Philadelphia has seen a lot of value in, being able to stick a guy who knows his role alongside guys like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So – They've been high on him since pretty much the pre-draft process. So it was a good pick for Philadelphia. It obviously shows how much they valued him to be able to trade up for him. It looks like maybe OKC or another team could have hopped in the early 20s to grab him. But on the Boston side, I believe that I'm trying to remember who they got back in that.
So they got Philly traded them 24 and 33. They ended up trading 24 later on to Phoenix with Aaron Baines, and then getting a 2020 first round pick from the Bucks. So a lot of these trades are almost connected, so it's somewhat confusing.
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many that's been going on, but I know that it looks like Boston is trying to clear up cap space. I mean, we knew that it was going to be very rare that they actually use all three of their first round picks. I know that they got Romeo Langford. I know that they got Grant Williams at 14 and 22 respectively. It kind of looks like a former move for the future in terms of what the Celtics are trying to do.
I think it makes sense. You don't really necessarily want three rookies in the pick ended up, you know, you get rid of the salary in Baines and then you bring in a future first round pick. Cause like you said, I don't think really many teams want to bring in three first round rookies unless you're in a full on rebuild.
Well, and the picks aren't necessarily high in general. I mean, you're talking about 14, 20, and 20, or 14, 22, and 24 in this sense. So there's not too big of an advantage to be able to take three of them and have that salary on the books when you're trying to contend for a title as well.
Exactly. And then we just mentioned the other trade between Boston and Phoenix. We don't really have to touch on that one much. Clippers and Nets. Nets send 27, which turned into I'll let Dalton pronounce his name, to the Clippers for a 2020 first-round pick via the Sixers and the 56th pick in the draft. So who would the Clippers draft for 27, Dalton?
They took Mafondu Cabangeli, a big man out of Florida State.
Any thoughts on this trade, Corey?
This is Mutombo's nephew?
Correct.
Yes.
I mean, some athletic ability. Looked like he can maybe be a player down the line. I didn't know a lot about him, Dalton. You can lead me in heavily, probably.
Yeah, Cabangeli is kind of a guy that you look at, and one thing that really kind of you see right off the bat is the tenacity that he plays with. Kind of a Montrezl Harrell fire that he plays with. Kind of a little bit bigger than Harrell, a true 6'10", long wingspan, like you said. He's kind of got the genetics of his uncle Dikembe. But he's very raw offensively, but does possess three-point potential. So, I mean, there's a lot of potential for a role in the Clippers. I never really see him being more than a rotational big man. But, I mean, he does have a lot of high upside. So, I like this move for the Clippers, but I really like this move for the Nets. And that's kind of throughout their whole draft process. I mean, they flipped the 17th pick for Torian Prince, and they drop off some salary as well. And now they flip the 27th for a future pick next year, which, I mean, there's only three picks that could be lower than 27 this year. So I think it's really a good move for the future.
Yeah, and not to mention they do not have a cap hold now for a first-round pick, opening up a little bit more salary cap, closer to $69 million. They still need to open up around $1.5 million, so they have enough to sign KD and Kyrie. So obviously opening up as much cap space as possible. And you mentioned the trade for Torian Prince. They also gave up a 2020 first-round pick for next year. So now that they get a pick back, Sean Marks likes to have a pick in every draft. So I think it works out for both parties. And then we also have Cavs sending four second-round picks to Detroit for the 30th overall pick, Kevin Porter. I know somebody you're very high on, Dalton.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, some people think it's kind of crazy that they sent four second-round picks, but I think this is absolutely worth it. I think that the Cleveland Cavaliers hit a home run here. It sucks to see Kevin Porter slide to 30, but it's not necessarily something that's too far-fetched. It actually maybe could have been predicted if he didn't go in the 11 to 15 range. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy, in my opinion, has a top five player in this class upside. I think that his game really translates, and he has all-star potential. So to get a guy like that at the kind of bargained price at the 30th pick at the expense of four second-rounders, I think you have to pull the trigger 10 times out of 10.
I mean, it's interesting them getting another guard.
Yes.
Obviously getting Garland. Now they have Sexton. Now they have Porter. A lot of guards, but, I mean, this kid can score. It just depends if he can kind of settle down off the court and has become a better, more mature player.
And I think from the Cavs' perspective, they had a lot of second-round picks, so trading four second-round picks isn't necessarily a big deal, as bad as it seems. And then also, you know, I think if you're in the Cavs situation rebuilding and we look at their roster, not necessarily a ton of young talent. You guys mentioned Garland, but getting, you know, Kevin Porter, now they have another player that has the potential to pop. And I think that's exactly what you're looking for. And I think it's okay. You still need three good guards in the NBA. Like, it's okay having three good guards. You have two starters and you have one guy you bring off the bench. And it's not like there's a guarantee all of them are going to pop off and become above average starters to all-stars. So I think it's actually a pretty smart move from the Cavs. I feel like something we haven't been saying about them a lot lately.
Yeah, in terms of taking Porter, I mean, Nick, you hit the nail on the head. You do have to have pretty much almost three, maybe four guards. And I think the real the question or the concern that we're overlooking right now is how is necessarily Darius Garland going to fit in with Colin Sexton? Because although we know that Colin Sexton has been rumored to play more off ball, it's still going to be interesting to see how they do split up the duties of taking the ball up the court and how that offense is going to flow. Kevin Porter, with his ability to create his own shot, kind of alleviates maybe some of the early season woes or kind of the growing pains for the rookies in terms of overall offensive cohesion.
And it helps. There's no pressure. You know, no one expects them to win anything, so they can really experiment and get kind of crazy out there. Any other thoughts on that trade, Corey?
No, I just think, like Dalton kind of alluded to, it's going to be interesting to see how Sexton and Garland really coexist and if Porter can become anything down the line.
And just to touch on one more trade, I'm sure there was more in the second round. Sixers sent the 42nd pick and Jonathan Simmons to the Wizards, obviously trying to clear up some cap space for the summer.
Makes sense. And the Wizards need a wing, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm going to take a flyer on them.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of one of those very low risk, very low reward type moves. So, I mean, this really, there's not too much to look into, just kind of a future play for Philadelphia to clear some cap.
All right, guys. We'll briefly touch on the top five picks. You know, there's not really a ton to say about the first couple. You know, Zion, you know, obviously, we'll blow out plenty about him. I think, if anything, after tonight with all the interviews and stuff like that, he's even more likable. Like, you kind of rooting for Zion to be really good and just look at that skill set. So I'm happy for that. Any thoughts on Zion?
I mean, I thought the first off, I thought the fit was extremely dope. I don't know.
Fire.
And then, of course, the emotion, crying, talking about his mother and how much she had a positive impact on his life. I mean, a lot of guys cried tonight. I feel like more than I've seen in any years past, the players were really emotional tonight.
Top three especially. This was like, it was a sad show. Everybody was crying. And it wasn't even just like a little crying. It was like, okay, are you trying to make like the viewers shed tears right now?
Right, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about it more, but like when RJ Barrett's dad was like, I'm proud of you. Like, right? Yeah. Just like, wow. I'm proud of you too, man. it was a really sweet moment, these first three picks. And Zion, for sure. I mean, I'm really excited to see what he can do. Obviously, I have my questions about him because of his size and everything else. But the Pelicans' future looks bright, and I'm really happy for him as the player going number one.
I mean, what is there to say about Zion Williamson that hasn't already been said probably tenfold? But, you know, the real thing that kind of stood out to me is that we finally get, you know, we put these guys on podiums, especially guys like Zion Williamson, to see him in a vulnerable state, pretty much bawling his eyes out. I mean, it kind of brings you back down to earth and you realize these guys are 18, 19 years old. I mean, their lives are about to change. They've been working for this. I mean, Zion's already a very likable guy. I mean, there's really not too much you can't like about him, except for maybe he's beat your team in, which he's done to mine. So, but I mean, what is there not to like about the guy? He carries himself in a good way. There's no off the court issues except for some Snapchats. But other than that, I mean, the guy's pretty much a fan favorite across the league almost.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a really nice career, obviously. He's a ton of skill. Needs to develop a little bit more probably offensively in terms of his jump shot. But I'd be excited if I was a Pelican fan. You know, we mentioned all the guys being excited. You had Ja Morant at number two. Any thoughts on him? Obviously, these first three picks are already locked in for a couple weeks now.
I mean, I like what Memphis is doing. I mean, Ja Morant's another good piece. You got Jaren Jackson Jr. They get Brandon Clark later on. Which I was an absolute steal, the fact that he fell into the 20s and then they were able to trade with OKC for him. You know, this is rebuilding time for Memphis, and it's intriguing to see what they can do with some of these young guys. I don't think they're as far away from being a somewhat tougher team in the West with some of these young guys.
Yeah, make no mistake about it. Jaren Jackson Jr. is a very nice prospect. Last year he was one of my top three prospects. So, very high on him, but he's not the face you see on your franchise in terms of the ego. Ja Morant's got that fire about him. He's got the hype that forms around the name. I mean, the triple-double machine. There's the writing's on the wall with this one with Morant.
Yeah, take the next step. Obviously, just recently traded Mike Conley. He's also a podcast out about that on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, TG Baths Talk, Tom, and
Google. The plug. Yeah.
And then also, I forgot to plug this before about Zion. You want a Zionology t-shirt, head to designtree.com/offtheglass. There's a promo code right now, America10, for $10 off. Get that for $15. Start off your Zion fanhood the right way.
But even better plug.
Yeah. Number three, we got RJ Barrett, who just really seemed to embrace being picked by the Knicks and just seemed super excited. And I think he had one quote. It was like, yo, I'm a Knick. Like, so yeah. good for him.
He was getting up to leave that press conference, and he's like this, and he's just like, yo, I'm a Knick. And it's just like, it's awesome to see. He had his little interview on ESPN. He was saying, you know, like, he wants to play in front of all those fans. Like, that's the type of stuff he lives for. And obviously we know New York is almost a dog-eat-dog city to play in. It's brutal. The fans are a big part of the games and everything else, and the fact that Barrett understands that going in is a plus. The fact that he wants to play in front of a big fan base, a passionate fan base, that matters. And the fact that he wants to be here, I think if you're a Knicks fan and seeing Porzingis kind of demand out, how that kind of fell apart, and just the years of torment to a degree, getting a guy who wants to play for your franchise and just like seems genuinely happy about playing for your franchise with the cap space you have going forward. It's just a all around good feeling for Barrett and the Knicks organization.
Yeah. If there's one player in this draft class who can match the intensity that comes in, the pressure that comes with playing in the Big Apple, it's RJ Barrett. I mean, there's not been many prospects in the past 5 years that are willing to take every single big shot in every single big game like Barrett. I mean, he's a guy that is going to be able to knock down clutch shots, and not only do that, but rally a fan base that needs to get a true identity.
Yeah, and I think that's a real positive too, is that he's embracing New York and kind of has like that attitude and that confidence that, hey, the Knicks miss out on, you know, free agency, which seems like a real possibility right now. RJ Barrett kind of has some pop to him, and there's some real excitement with him because I know some people are really high in his game, especially some of the guys on the draft team here. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. Then obviously we got DeAndre Hunter at number four. We kind of briefly touched about him, you know, the Hawks going to get their guy that they wanted. And then number five, you know, we kind of hinted at it as well, you know, Garland and Sexton, can they work? So after the top five picks, we're going to dive into who are the biggest winners of this draft.
Dalton, you can lead us off with that.
I think number one has to be New Orleans. You get, even if you don't have another pick, you get Zion Williamson, and that alone makes you a winner. But not only that, but you also set up for your future with the trade with Atlanta. You have Jackson Hayes now, who has one of the highest upsides in this class, and you get a guy who's going to be able to come in and give you shooting relief and guard versatility in Nikhil Alexander-Walker. So New Orleans is probably the top winner. I think that Brooklyn's up there with the future plays that they played for themselves, and the Cavs being able to address their guard play and get three studs in.
I mean, I like what Atlanta did once again to get another core piece. I think New Orleans, of course, getting these assets and being able to cash in this draft was crucial. I don't know if there's many other winners. I don't know how a lot of these guys pop off. I would say like the Celtics, we're talking losers. I think the Celtics kind of lost a little bit. But yeah.
Yeah, I think winners, I think you guys pretty much nailed each one of you. I agree with both your picks. You know, the Hawks, I like what they did because it never really made sense for them to draft, you know, three guys with those picks. You know, I know they gave up some seconds. They had to take on Solomon Hill's contract. They probably weren't going to use the cap space anyways. So go after DeAndre Hunter. And then getting Cam Reddish at 10, I know a lot of people think his game's going to translate better into the NBA. So that's a solid pick. Like, their core is looking very good moving forward, especially, you know, with Collins, Young, and Herder. And then they still have some other pieces they can draft moving forward. And they'll have cap space because Solomon Hill's expiring this year. Allen Crabbe's expiring this year. So going to next offseason, if things go really well, Hawks are in a nice position. And then I think if you're the Pelicans, you know, like Dalton said, you got the best player in the draft. And then you just expanded more. And then you drafted more guys that can build into your core. And now you have a lot of potential in that young core in New Orleans. And there's a good chance that some of them are going to hit their upside. You know, there's no guarantee all your prospects are going to hit your upside. But when you have so many swings on your roster, I think you put yourself in a really good position. So Atlanta and New Orleans really stick out for me. Funny enough, they made a trade with each other. I also think I didn't mind Minnesota either. I don't mind them trading up because they need to get talent. And if they can't dump Teague and Wiggins, get Jarrett Culver, now all of a sudden you have another prospect to build with what you have.
Yeah, I just want to say Carson Edwards just got drafted by the Boston Celtics. And I like Carson Edwards. I like him a lot. So that's fun. They need a point guard, so maybe he can get some minutes. But no, I completely agree with what we – what did I just say? I just lost my point.
We're talking about the biggest draft.
Culver. No, I know. Culver. I completely agree with Minnesota going this route and just going with – not a, I don't want to say a safe pick, but if everything falls apart, at least you would once again have three young guys in Wiggins, Culver, and Towns to kind of keep moving you forward.
Yeah, and I mean, you even take Wiggins out of there and you put Josh Okogie, who had a really good year last year. So I think you probably look a little bit higher on him. I even don't think from, like, I know there's going to be some questions, can Garland and Sexton work? But I like the fact that the Cavs took Kevin Porter with 30. I just think that's a really good move. It's a nice, like, all right, let's take a big swing and hopefully you can hit. But in terms of losers, what are you guys looking at? I know Corey mentioned Boston.
I'm a little bit better now that Boston got Edwards, but.
Yeah, I think the biggest draft loser besides the Celtics, I think the Suns really are in the position of kind of wearing that hat. And the only reason that being is the fact that they took Cam Johnson at 11. Because I'm looking at the board and there are literally like seven or eight guys that if they would have made the selection with even one of those guys, they're not in this position. But I think Cam Johnson, you could have got him, had a more severe discount later on in the draft. So – to be able to clear cap space and then take some on for Sarge and then use that pick to take a guy that you could have got maybe 10 picks later. It's just, it kind of doesn't make too much sense.
Yeah, it's like the Suns really had no plan. Like you mentioned, they took on Sark and then take on Aaron Baines later on after giving away TJ Warren from free. And we talked about it. Warren's not a bad player. It's not like they're expected to get a lot of value for him, but it seemed like, hey, we're going to dump this contract because we have plans for the offseason. No, we really don't have any types of plans. So I think that's what's kind of weird for Phoenix.
I think one more loser would be the Charlotte Hornets as well.
Dylan would agree.
Sorry, Dylan. Dylan would agree.
And we didn't even talk about Washington.
What do you mean, the Wizards?
Oh, yeah. Please do not get me started with Washington. Yes, Washington is the biggest draft loser. I did not know how I forgot the Washington Wizards, but they are the biggest draft loser, and there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
So tell us about who they drafted, Dom.
Well, they drafted Rui Hachimura out of Gonzaga, and, you know, if they were choosing him with a second-round pick, I would be ecstatic for the Washington Wizards, but this is just not a pick that I like at 9, let alone 29.
Yeah, I think, listening to you guys and listening to other people on NBA Twitter, I know a few people were kind of high on him, but still, even the people that were high on him were like, okay, maybe in the teens.
Right.
Getting him at 9, especially in Washington and the situation they're at, it's like, what is the thought process here? Like, I think if you look at him, maybe he's a team, he could have an impact now. It's kind of like he's not really good at anything. He's okay at a lot of things, but like, there's no high upside.
You know what this is a prime example of? Why you don't go into an NBA draft without a GM.
True. Yeah, this is an ownership pick. Sorry to cut you off, Don. This is an ownership pick because Alder mentioned this in the group chat. He, you know, the first Japanese player drafted in the first round, they're going to sell a ton of jerseys. It's going to help them in terms of money, but it's not going to help them on the court. So this is a pick made by ownership and not made by your GM who cares about basketball.
Yeah.
Well, it's good that they're selling a lot of jerseys, his jerseys in Japan, because they're not going to be selling too many of them here in the States. That's for sure. Like you said, I mean, I went on and on about Hachimura and the mock drafts and the Heat drafts. I mean, any draft podcast you can name. There's just not a lot of upside. You know, there's a lot of people that point to his athleticism, but he's not really athletic in terms of lateral quickness. And I think that's where he's going to be kind of a hindrance, especially on the defensive side when you talk about pick and rolls and stuff like that. He's going to get absolutely bamboozled on pick and rolls. I mean, there's not too much offensive upside, maybe except for the mid-range game. That's kind of where he makes his money. But even then, I mean, you got bigger, better, stronger, faster guys in the league, and I'm not so sure that he's going to be able to get to his spots in the league as he did comfortably at Gonzaga.
Inquiry, I know I cut you off. What did you have to say about Charlotte and their pick?
I just want to say with the pick, I mean, it's like a win now type of player because he's a little bit older. But
the Hornets are winning it all this year.
I just don't understand what Charlotte's supposed to be trying to convince Kemba why he should stay. And I just feel like there's a little bit more talent on the board. I don't know. It's Charlotte once again failing to even maybe trade the pick or package it with one of their contracts to try and free up some cap. Even if Batum was too hard, maybe a Biombo. I was almost positive we were going to see a Wiggins and a sixth pick going to Charlotte for an expiring in the 11th or some sort of trade like that. But of course Charlotte just didn't make any moves really. And once again, I just don't see why Kemba wants to resign.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say it was a safe pick, but when you're trying to rebuild and get pieces to convince your franchise point guard to stay, going safe does not help your case, especially when you're picking in the lottery. I think there were about four or five guys that I probably would have taken over Washington. And even if you were to trade down, I thought you probably could have got Washington at 19 or 20. I mean, he's not a bad prospect. There's just not too much high upside, except for maybe he's just a smaller big man who can maybe step out and hit the three later on in his career. But other than that, there's not too much to look at in terms of potential.
All right, guys, before we get out of here, give me some dark horse picks that you like that probably won't get enough hype, but these players could end up being really good or it could be a really good fit.
Gaga. Bissidis. What is the last name?
Goja Batadze.
Goga Batadze. I'm in the fan club. We'll work on it.
Goja Batadze.
Goga knows I'm for him. Goga knows I'm for him.
So this is going to be the test of next year's season. If Corey can nail his name, we'll put bets on it.
No, seriously, though. I actually love Nate McMillan when, I mean, maybe I'm just buying into the Kool-Aid that the Pacers are selling me, but Nate McMillan saying that they actually think he can come in and contribute right away next season. He's a little bit of like a stretch five, can knock the long ball down, a decent rim protector, not a great perimeter defender, but still only 19. Like, this is a young guy. So he's almost possibly the prototypical type of our ideal backup center to have behind Miles Turner. Having two centers who can protect the rim and shoot threes, you're not losing much of your flipping the guys in and out, and also possibly signifies that either Sabonis is going to play a lot more for this year, or they look to move Sabonis before they pay him at the end of next year. That's what this move also kind of signifies. But Goga,
I think you brought up a great point. Sorry to cut you off, Dalton. I think it makes one of their bigs probably a little bit more expandable, because TJ Leaf was a first round pick from them 2 years ago. I know he played a little bit more last season, so I think the Sabonis trade seems like a real possibility, because I know there was chatter about them possibly moving Miles Turner, but it never really made any sense.
Get about it. Never going to happen.
Yeah, Goga Bitadze is – I don't think people realize just how solid of a prospect he actually is. There's really not a true foreign super prospect like Luka Doncic or – Kristaps Porzingis, but I mean, a late bloomer type prospect. But Tadze, one thing that really stands out to me about him is his pick and roll game. He's going to be able to come in right away, and he's going to be able to roll, and he's going to be able to pop off the pick and rolls. And we've seen, if history holds true, I mean, he's going to have a pretty decent NBA career if you can roll to the rim off the pick and roll and know your role. Not to be a pun intended in that case, but he's not the greatest defender, but he can protect the rim. He's very, very smart and very good with his hands and feet. So, I mean, there's a lot of potential there. I love the fit in Indianapolis. I love Tyler Hero in Miami. A lot of people think they might have gotten to a stretch, but honestly, if they don't pick him at 13, I think Boston picks him at 14. He's potentially the best shooter in this class. And the last move that we kind of touched on briefly before hopping on, because it had just got announced, Nicholas Claxton to Brooklyn with, I believe it was the 31st pick. Yeah. Big man out of Georgia, the 14th prospect on my big board, a guy who can create his own shot for his size at 6'11 is remarkable. Very light on his feet, can move in transition and guard the rim with good authority. And I think that there's a lot there that you can maybe even be able to play him at the four if you need to, and the backup five behind Jared Allen. So a lot of good value there for the Nets next season.
And Here. Talking about the Nets, Dalton will be on the Brooklyn Buzz tomorrow, recapping the draft with Jack and I, going a little bit more in depth on Claxton. But Corey, what do you got?
Nassir Little, who the Portland Trailblazers picked up. Dalton already giving me a look. He's not a Giant fan.
Can't shoot. Is that the issue with him, Dalton?
What was that?
He can't shoot.
He's more streaky, right?
In a nutshell, well, he shot under, I think it was like 27% from three this past year. It's not the fact that he can't shoot. So fact is the that he just looks lost offensively. And I'm not sure if that's with the position that North Carolina had him in or the role they had him fulfilling, but he just looked lost, especially not knowing what to do on offense except for trying to take his guy one-on-one. The shooting is an issue, and also defense. He gets beat a lot defensively, loses a lot in terms of interest and focus. So I think it's a lot more mental, but, I mean, you're talking about a player who couldn't have helped himself out any more than the combine measurements, because you can't teach a 7'3 wingspan. So, I mean, there's potential. He's going to have to show me some progression for me to love him at any team.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of him either way. I like some of the potential. I watched some of it. My buddies are UNC fans, so I watched a little bit of him play. But there are plenty of issues with any of these guys, pretty much who go out of the top three, and at least in this draft. And then lastly, we just mentioned him, but Carson Edwards, I really like that pick by Boston. Obviously, second round picks, you don't know. He's a little bit undersized for the point guard position, but a guy who can go out and get buckets. They don't have a point guard. And, you know, whether or not they sign someone big and let Terry Rozier go, or they bring back Terry Rozier, there's a world where Carson Edwards becomes just a scorer off the bench for Boston, possibly. Another Indiana guy, the guy Romeo Langfield too, or Langford, who I think I just don't know what his ceiling is necessarily, but a guy who can also score. So I didn't mind those two moves. They could be dark horses.
Yeah, Corey. I mean, I think you're pretty much spot on here. Carson Edwards, that's a phenomenal pick. I mean, you can highlight the physical limitations, but one thing you can't take away from the guy is absolutely tough as nails, and that's what it all comes down to. He can score in a bunch of ways. I mean, he had you look back to the Elite Eight performance he had against Virginia. I mean, they had
DeAndre, one of my favorite college games I've ever seen.
I was actually there, and they had DeAndre Hunter on him all game, and Edwards was just having his way and creating his own shot. And I mean, Hunter is almost a foot taller than Edwards, just to show you how big of a competitor. And that, I think that kind of gets overlooked, is the heart that these guys have. So low risk. If he doesn't pan out, okay. But if he does, I mean, you have a potential Isaiah Thomas part two and Carson Edwards. So.
All right, guys, you heard it here. Dalton, Corey, excellent work tonight. As always, thank everybody for listening, checking in, whatever it may be. Find us iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Like we said, head to DesignTree/OffTheGlass, promo code America10 for $10 off. And everyone enjoy the rest of the festivities.
See you on that, lads.
See y'all later.